Greetings once again, my white brothers and sisters of the world. Welcome to another episode, the second episode of In Klassen We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. I'm very pleased to be with you once again as we together fight for the truth in this world, as we together fight for the racial loyalist idea. Last week's episode was the premiere episode of this show, and it was by all accounts very successful. We had 150 people listening last week, and that is a very good start for any radio program. No matter what radio program you are talking about, they always start small, and this is the same way with this show. In Klassen We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale is a show designed to espouse the racial loyalist viewpoint. This is a show that adamantly proclaims belief in our race, the white race, to the exclusion of all other beliefs and all other races. We do not care one iota about the welfare of the other races. We care about our own race exclusively. And we believe strongly in having a government that is for our race exclusively. We believe even more than that, that any government that does not have the interests of the founding race exclusively in mind is a tyranny by definition. And so therefore, the government of the United States itself is indeed a tyranny. The media that is in cahoots with the government is a tyranny, a tyrannical enterprise designed to pollute the minds of our people and turn them against themselves. The media wants to basically level a dagger at the heart of white people. The government wants to essentially dominate and enslave white people. We do not want this, most obviously. We consider our cause to be the most noble cause in the history of the world, a cause that transcends all other causes. For if the white race ceases to exist upon the face of this planet is worthless. If the white race ceases to exist on the face of this planet, all other causes and interests are completely irrelevant. For everything of value in this world is intrinsic to the white race, is bound up with the white race. If you value, for example, a safe neighborhood, you must ensure the survival of those who make that possible, white people. If you value a progressive educational system, an intelligent educational system, you must value those who make that possible, white people. If you value a pristine culture, you must value those who make culture possible, pristine culture possible, white people. And so we are racists. We are racial loyalists. We are in favor of the white race and in all things at all times. We are not here to speak out for the other races. We are not here to aid and abet them. Sadly enough, many are doing so today. Many in this government, as I mentioned, are interested in the welfare of the brown races, the black races, the yellow races, and not in the interests, or not in the welfare of white people. Right now, as a matter of fact, despite the government protestations to the contrary, or trying to hide any talk of this, in fact, in the daily controlled press, we have an open border. We have a border in which Mexicans are flooding into this country, stealing your job and mine, and polluting this society. We have a situation in which the mud people already here are breeding at an astronomical rate out of all proportion, and we are swimming in these mud races in this society today. Those of us who are any age at all, per se, or for example, can remember a time in which most areas of this country were white, and you could freely travel them. Certainly even in this area here, seeing a non-white in the city of East Peoria was a very rare occurrence. Now you're seeing it more and more. In cities across this country, this formerly great country, we see more and more of the mud flood. Well, if you're a mud person, it might be good to see a lot of mud people in America. But if you're white, then obviously it is not good. For in this world of eternal struggle, it is a fact that each race will naturally pursue its own interests to the exclusion of others. Sadly enough, however, That is basically the problem with white people, is that the other races are vigorously pursuing their own interests, while white people are pursuing the interests of the others as well. And so the interests of white people are not being represented at any kind of a governmental level. Instead, it behooves us of the World Church of the Creator to overturn and overthrow this current order and in place a sound, stable, decent government in its stead. On this week's episode, after this brief introduction I've just elaborated upon, on this week's episode I wish to talk about something that's not really talked about very much in the white racial loyalist movement, and that is grief. We, of course, have seen a lot of talk in the press the last few weeks about what happened on September 11th. There's nothing practically on besides that. And, of course, they're making a lot of the grief of those victims' relatives concerning the loss of their loved ones, of course. Well, this is understandable. Certainly, it is understandable that those who lost loved ones on September 11th are upset and they are grieving. But let us put this in the proper perspective, shall we? Why is it, for example, that we have to be overcome as a nation, as a people, with grief concerning September 11th, but not have any grief or any public display of grief for those white people who have been killed by niggers the past 40 years or 100 years? Why is it, for example, that we have to be aggrieved and have flags at half staff and everything else to commemorate the victims of September 11th, but it is not apparently fair game and talked about much to be aggrieved about what happened to the German people in World War II, what happened to the German civilians in Dresden, in which they were incinerated on orders of the Jews in a city that had absolutely no military significance. Why is it, for example, that we can feel aggrieved and sad and wring our hands and cry and sing songs about the Jews who supposedly died under National Socialist German occupation in World War II, but at the same time you don't hear any trumpets going, any violins playing when you are dealing with the issue of the Russian people who were slaughtered by Stalin? What about the white Russians who died under Stalin, under his Jewish executioners? What about the white people who have been killed in various wars across the centuries? What about the white people in this country who have been butchered by the blacks and the brown races? We don't seem to receive a lot of grief along those lines. The point being that the media is fostering and promoting this grief for a very important purpose. The media does not do anything simply to report the news. The media, that's not their purpose as far as they are concerned. The media does not report the news, they make the news. They are interested in molding American public opinion to further the interests of those who control the media, namely the Jews. It is very fitting, therefore, for the media to talk about the Holocaust until they're blue in the face and we are having to swallow this crap over and over again to the point where every third grade child can tell you how many Jews died in World War II, but express surprise if you tell them how many Americans died and would have no idea on their own unless you tell them. It is very convenient for the Jews to promote the Holocaust because it supports their interests of having a state of Israel, for example, and of milking the American taxpayer out of billions of dollars a year to support that parasitical welfare state. And it's the same thing, basically, with what happened on September 11th. Okay, 6,000 people lost their lives. That certainly is a sizable amount of people. But compared to the atrocities committed by Jews against white people in this world, it's really a drop in the bucket when you compare it to the millions of white people killed by Stalin and his Jewish henchmen, the millions killed by Trotsky, or at least many, probably would be millions, of white people who were killed in the Bolshevik Revolution. When you talk about, of course, the mud invasion of Europe, the Moors, who killed many people in Spain, numerous people in Spain and France, until they were thrown out by Karl Martell in the year 732 at the Battle of Tours. Turkish invasion of Greece and Bulgaria and the Balkans. Many thousands and millions of white people have been killed in these wars, and yet there doesn't seem to be much remembrance. There doesn't seem to be much sadness, and instead we have to concentrate on what happened September 11th and what happened to the Jews in World War II. Now, I know, the argument might be, well, of course, September 11th was just around the corner. It was just a few weeks ago. Of course, there's no question about that. However, let's face it, this is going to be probably the most remembered event in American history in the days ahead. The government will make sure that this day is well remembered, more remembered than Pearl Harbor, more remembered than any other date in American history. The media will be singing songs about it for many years to come. And that's why I'm saying all this now, to give you a good warning, a good foretaste of things to come. This will not be put into the proper historical perspective, and it will overshadow all of the other terrible things that have happened in white history. Now, what's the reason behind this? We know why the Jews, of course, promote the Holocaust, so that they can get sympathy from people and get their money. Now, why September 11th? What's the purpose in that? Well, the government wants to justify whatever actions it takes. The government wants to build this sadness up in the American people to the point where the people will say, hey, do whatever you want, government, just protect us. That includes eroding our constitutional rights, so-called. That includes spying on people. That includes perhaps arresting people without charge eventually, and eventually martial law. That is a possibility. We don't believe, the World Church of the Creator does not believe it is an extremely likely proposition, but it's quite possible. So they're basically laying the seeds for tomorrow's tyranny, even more of a tyranny than we have already today. So as long as they can keep the sympathy going and the sadness going and remember these people far beyond proportionality in history, they will be able to have justification, the green light from the masses to do whatever they want to do. And in that regard, let me segue into something else that's going on here locally. Just today, I interviewed with a reporter from the East Peoria, or actually the Times newspapers in Peoria, which publish a number of newspapers in this area. And he interviewed me concerning hate groups and domestic terrorism. That's the story he's working on. Now, when he called me on Saturday, this past Saturday, and told me that he wanted an interview from me concerning hate groups and domestic terrorism, I was going to tell him no, that there's simply no reason to have such an interview, and that kind of a link between domestic terrorism and hate groups, as he wanted to classify our World Church of the Creator as a hate group, is pretty asinine. I mean, the fact of the matter, of course, as always, we are legal, we are peaceful, we are nonviolent. That has been our tactic, not for moral reasons, as I've indicated in many speeches in the past, etc., but for tactical reasons. Morally, we probably have the right to do whatever we would want to do against the enemies of our people. We certainly do have that right morally. But tactically, it is not wise, because we have to instead win the hearts and minds of our people, and we cannot do so very easily from inside jail cells or being dead. So, in any case, I basically intimated to him that I was going to say no to his offer, at which time he told me that he has had conversations with members of the Justice Department and the FBI and local police forces, and my name keeps coming up as a possible domestic terrorist risk. Well, I told him at that point that is extremely asinine, perhaps one of the most absurd things I've ever heard of. After all, I'm one of the most watched public figures in this state. Only Jesse Hymetown Jackson might outdo me in that regard, but that's only because he's been at it a lot longer. But in any case, I did tell him that, well, if people are going to talk about me, then I'm going to talk about me and myself and give him my viewpoint and address these concerns, so-called. So that's what's going on here. And this is one of the reasons why I'm talking about grief on this program and what's going on with September 11th, because here we have a situation where there are individuals talking about, well, right now, in fact, just a couple of days ago, this anti-terrorism bill was passed in which it basically suspends the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, illegally, of course, which wouldn't be the first time the federal government has broken the law, but and nor will it be the last, but in any case, it is illegal what they are doing. And then we have local officials saying that, well, you might want to watch out for Matt Hale and the World Church of the Creator. And apparently there is a published report in the FBI about how we're a possible risk, etc. Well, it doesn't stretch imagination to realize that the reason why these individuals are talking about me and about our church is because we are, of course, exposing them, and we are gaining support amongst the broad masses of people, perhaps more than ever before. If a person did not, for example, have the opinion that we had opened borders to the detriment of this country before September 11th, they believe that now. There's not many people out there who would say, hey, let's just have an open border and allow the situation we had before September 11th to continue. Most people instead are talking about sending these Arabs out of the country, get rid of these foreign exchange students, let's get these non-whites out of America. They may not put it that way. They may say, well, let's get possible terrorists out, or they may couch it in more vague language or politically correct language. But most people, I believe, if they could snap their fingers and all the Arabs would be out of America, they would do so. Now what we have to do is make sure that they would do that to the Jews as well. Let's get both groups out of this country, and let's stop having America as basically a battering ram or a form of cannon fodder for the Jews. The struggles of the Middle East should remain in the Middle East and not be brought to this soil. Now, one thing let me mention at this point is that there's perhaps some confusion about where we stand as far as country goes and patriotism go. Well, we believe in our soil. We believe, in fact, in blood, soil, and honor. That is one of our sayings in the church. We guard it diligently, for it is the heart of our faith, as Ben Klassen said, the pivotal creed of blood, soil, and honor. We believe in our blood, our race, we believe in our soil, our land, and we believe in our honor. We will defend to the death those principles. But at the same time, we do not accept the notion that there is a line on a map that divides white people. We do not accept the notion that we should place white people on this side of a line before white people on that side of a line. We believe in having a racial family across the world. We know that white people everywhere are brother and sister. We don't accept the notion, for example, that is very popular across this country, sadly and sickeningly enough, that an American nigger has more in common with us than a white German or a white Frenchman or a white Russian. No. We believe that the bond of race is far, far more important than the bond of nationality. But that, be that as it may, we do believe in soil. We believe in our land. We believe in having a land for our kind. We believe in removing the enemies of our people, the biological, racial enemies of our people from this land. And essentially, whatever moves towards that is good. In that sense, then, the more people hate this government, the better. The more people hate the non-whites, the better. Because the quicker we will have the society and the government that we wish to take its place. It's as simple as that. And so when this reporter asked me, he said, well, do you support the government? I said, well, no, of course not. We can't support the government. We cannot support any government whose interest is basically the annihilation of our kind. And while the government may never say that this is their interest, they would say, oh gosh, we care about everybody. That's where they are admitting that they do not care about our people, because anyone with eyes and ears and a modicum of intelligence realizes that you cannot be for all races and still be for your race. It is impossible for someone to aid all the races equally and expect their own race to benefit. It's as simple as that, because you have to pick and choose in this world. If you advance one race, you are holding back another. You are driving back another. I guess the analogy I would use in that regard is the individual who, just imagine, he has a dozen wives. If he loves all of his wives equally, he is cheating the one that should be most close to his heart. If a man says, hey, I love all women the same, he's not much of a man. Most people would admit that and agree with that. You have to discriminate, in other words. You have to make your choice. If a man loves 12 women the same way, then he is cheating one of them of his most love. And it's the same thing with races. If you love all races the same, you are cheating your own race. If you love all families the same, you are cheating your own family. It's as simple as that. And so when someone says, hey, I'm colorblind, and that's a popular saying in some quarters, not as much as it used to be, but some people say proudly so, well, I'm colorblind. Well, that's pretty stupid to be. It's never good to be colorblind. Ask somebody who really is colorblind. Is it fun to walk around when the world's gray and various shades thereof? No. We have a sense of seeing colors for a very good reason. It is nature's way of delineating who is a friend, who is a foe, who is neutral, or what is neutral. And as I stated on last week's program, the other races are our natural biological enemies. Why? Because they threaten us. They threaten our continued existence. Our cause is not so much about personal dislike of the other races. I've been asked that many times in the past. Well, what has a black man done to you? Well, it doesn't matter if he's done anything personally to me. I know through looking at the evidence that their presence in America has been damaging. And therefore, that's the only yardstick. If they're good for our people, then they're good, but they have not been. And so the answer is to get rid of them, to deport them, to repatriate them back to their native land. That goes for the other races, of course, as well. It's kind of like cockroaches. I don't care personally. I don't have a personal problem with Mr. Cockroach on the counter. I don't know him. I don't know him personally, but I don't want him on my counter. And I don't want the black cockroaches and the brown cockroaches and the yellow cockroaches and the hook-nosed cockroaches in America either. I don't want them around. I don't want them to damage my culture. I don't want them to interbreed with our people. I don't want them to destroy the civilization. Well, if you look at the history, in fact, of the world, sadly enough, white people over and over again have become overwhelmed by the mud races. I would draw your attention, in fact, to Arthur Kemp's History of the White Race, which is linked at our website, in which you can also get the book copy as well by contacting us for evidence of this. Over and over again, from ancient India to what is modern-day Iran, or was Persia at one time, to Mesopotamia, the land of Sumer, to Syria, to Jordan, to Palestine, to Egypt, all across the ancient world, all across the world, white people sadly but surely fail to realize the importance of race and mongrelize with the lower races, thereby destroying their civilizations. Civilizations do not collapse as a result of lost wars. That's something that people need to always understand. They only collapse due to the defilement of the blood. Now, Adolf Hitler said that many years ago, and yet the truth remains just as sure today as it did then that that is the case. There's no question about it, and I would encourage you to read that book, History of the White Race, and in fact read Mein Kampf, to understand fully that principle. Civilization is part and parcel of the white race. White people are the originators, in fact, of all worthwhile culture and civilization in this world. Every so-called civilization created by the non-whites was created by white people. The impetus has always been from white blood, white minds, white brawn, etc. White people are the pioneers. And sadly enough, we have a situation today where our people are on the run. White people are on the run everywhere in this world. White people are on the defensive because they have failed to recognize the importance of race, have failed to guard their territories, have instead welcomed the other races, the inferior, disgusting races, so-called mankind, and allowed them into their lands. And hence we have the problems that we have today. History has shown, in fact, that the only way you can have a stable land is to have a homogeneous land, one race inhabiting it. If you have multiracial groups within a society, that society will lack a common value, a common purpose, a common heritage, a common culture, and the society will, in short order, collapse. Now, there are some people, in fact, the vast majority, let me just say this at this point, the vast majority of the white masses are ignorant, extremely ignorant of all the principles that we racial loyalists take for granted in some ways. I mean, we've known it for a long time. Many of you listening to me right now have known about these things. So in your dealings with the public, you must speak from a level or at a level in which they can understand. If you start talking to them about ancient Egypt, various civilizations, etc., they're not going to perhaps quite be ready for that. So you have to break it down into more concrete and easily verifiable ways, such as neighborhoods. You can always talk about how a non-white neighborhood is more violent and more criminal than a white neighborhood. You can talk about sports. You can talk about the fact that everybody's willing to admit, practically, that blacks are better athletes. Why can't we admit that white people are better thinkers? Most people, a lot of people really can't argue with that. For example, there are a lot of people out there who would say, oh yes, blacks are better in basketball and better in track and field. Well, if that's the case, then can't we admit that white people are better in mathematics and better in logic, better in statistical computations, etc.? Well, we should be able to do that. And most of them, even those naysayers out there who at first glance would say, oh, we're all created equal, would admit that certain races are better in certain things than others. That's where you have to start with a lot of these people in order to educate them. Now, we're getting a little far afield here, but that's okay. This is a show that's not designed to simply read to you facts that are in any book that you can obtain from us or obtain through other sources. It is not my hope or intent to simply read aloud what's on the printed page. I want you to think about these issues so that you can go out and preach to others. And the more that you hear someone talk about these things off the pages of a book, the better. Simply reading about all these matters aren't really sufficient, or isn't really sufficient. You have to have your spoken word come into play. And that in itself is another issue, certainly, that we have to tackle, the spoken word. The spoken word is more inspiring to people than the written word. All great movements in this world's history, if you want to call them great simply by virtue of their success rate, have become, by virtue of the spoken word, more than the written word. Certainly communism is an example of that. Christianity is an example of that. And creativity will be an example of that as well. I'm going to pause at this time to change the tape that we are making here. I will be back shortly. We are back with In Clawson We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. We're talking about ways to educate people, inspire people, turn them into good white racial loyalists. And I was talking about the spoken word. The spoken word is vital. The spoken word is the way to truly reach a person's psyche. A lot of people, for example, when they read a book, they're really not paying attention. And that's point number one, I suppose. A lot of people, when they read, they are thinking about other things. But if you're talking to them, it's a lot harder for them to be distracted. They can be. Anybody who's been sitting in a lecture hall, for example, at a university, can get quite distracted. I can tell you that I myself now and then would fall asleep in the lecture hall. Now, I suppose our foes would like to run with that and say, oh, well, gee whiz, that's why Matt Hale is what have you. But let's face it, I mean, the lecturers at a lecture hall at a university are very boring for the most part. They don't know how to capture the imagination and the interest of their students. What we have to do is be the opposite. We have to be proselytizers. We have to be preachers. We have to be fanatics. All of these terms are good terms. We need to be rabble-rousers. Now, that word has somewhat fallen into disfavor in this world, but the term is still a good term. Because, once again, victory is the only yardstick when it comes right down to it. If you win, you write the history books. If you lose, you are the villains in the history books. And that's why, of course, the Jews are interested in controlling our media. They want to control the thought processes of the people and essentially make white into black and black into white. There's no question that Adolf Hitler was right when he said that propaganda can make heaven look like hell and hell look like heaven, something to that effect. That's what's happened in this society today. As I was saying earlier, we have to make sure that we understand from where the masses are. The masses of people in this country are good people. Let there be no mistake, and let there be no thought that I am insulting the masses. I never insult the masses. I try to prod the masses. I try to prod these people into thinking more about these issues and not assume that Tom Brokaw and Dan Blather are telling the truth. I try to prod them into realizing that there is something beyond just their own personal ego at stake. And I try to prod them into thinking racially rather than simply nationally. You know, it's interesting, of course, that the original meaning of nation was race. And that has been completely lost because now we have all these multiracial conglomerate lands. But the original meaning was race. And we would like to see a situation where we have a racial nation once again, where we could say, well, yes, I have something in common with my neighbor. He's of the same blood. He's of the same language. He's of the same culture. He's of the same religion. He's of the same values. But now it's to the point where it's in some communities, it's very difficult to say that you have anything in common with them other than the fact that you live in the same land. And that's pretty pathetic, actually. For example, you'll hear people say, and maybe I'll even devote the rest of this program to this fact, you'll hear people say, well, we're all Americans, as if that means anything. It doesn't mean anything. All that means is that you all mutually pay taxes, maybe, and if they're illegal immigrants or if they're getting a break from the system otherwise, they're not even paying taxes. So what's this saying mean? Well, we're all Americans. Well, hell, by that token, you can say that the mosquitoes in America are Americans, too, and maybe the snakes in America, they're Americans, the cockroaches are Americans. It's a meaningless concept. Well, we're all Americans. Oh, I know. The people that want to wave the flag and talk about America's greatness and everything will say, well, but it's the values that made us great. No, unfortunately, once again, they're wrong. It wasn't the values of America that made America great, at least not the values that are commonly and currently talked about as American values, the idea of tolerance and the idea of embracing all as long as they're good Americans and diversity and that kind of thing. Those are certainly not American values. When this country was founded, of course, it was founded as a white country. All of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were white people. All of the people who put the Constitution together were white people. The individuals who were crowded off this land and killed in many battles were Indians, Mongoloids, that came to this country earlier, at least than the final settlement of white people with Christopher Columbus. You know, so no, this country's founding had nothing to do with tolerance. Because after all, if we had been tolerant of the Indians, then there probably wouldn't be a United States of America, because there had to be a certain amount of intolerance as we were driving them across the land. This diversity business. Well, no, this country wasn't founded on diversity and multiculturalism. There are numerous laws in place for many years that forbade citizenship to non-whites unless they were freed slaves eventually. But even before the abolition of slavery, certainly the blacks were considered property. They were considered property at the signing of the Declaration of Independence. They were property under the Constitution, and that's a fact. The United States statutes, and we just published this in the last issue of the struggle, the November, or actually the October issue of the struggle, we contained a statute or included a statute that talked about how only white people could be citizens of America. Now, those laws made sense. Today's laws, on the other hand, basically have as their common denominator the idea that, well, as long as you can speak and walk on two legs, and somehow you are to be embraced as a fellow American. Well, we don't accept that rubbish. Nobody has ever given us any reason to accept it, and so therefore we reject it. What other so-called values that people are talking about? I don't know what other values they might be getting at, but this business about America, you know, we're all Americans and America United, that's just all propaganda, it's all nonsense. And it just as I saw, in fact, I'll give you this example. I received a magazine today. We received a magazine in our P.O. box. I don't even know what the title of the magazine was, but on the cover of it, they were promoting, of course, patriotism, and this patriotism rush has become quite popular right now. And anyway, on the cover of this magazine, you have this nigger standing next to a white female, and most obviously, though he didn't have his arm around her, it was very clear that that was the intent, the symbolism of the nigger, the black buck, and the white woman for America. And they had their little American flags in their hands, etc. Well, my initial thought, as soon as I saw that, I thought to myself, well, that's not an America I want. That's not an America that makes me want to go out into the field of battle to preserve this current order. Absolutely not. This is America or American policy right now that we absolutely detest. And furthermore, my thought as soon as I saw the picture was that, hey, you know, I'd rather side with the sand niggers than a nigger American. That's just the bottom line. Now, of course, you know, in a more broader sense, we have to realize that the current war in Afghanistan is simply designed to promote the Jewish occupational government's interests. This is not a war to defend America. This is not a war to eliminate terrorism. You cannot eliminate terrorism by making more terrorists out of people, and that's exactly what the United States government is doing. Now, let me elaborate on that. We have to realize what the cause of terrorism is, and that is grievances. People are aggrieved in this world, and I use the word people loosely in that connotation. They are aggrieved in this world. The Arabs are very upset that we are bankrolling the state of Israel against its neighbors. The Arabs are naturally upset when Palestinian children are shot to death by American-made weapons, American-made bullets, American-made planes, American-made tanks. They're naturally quite upset about that. Now, the Jew media doesn't want to talk about that much. They want to say, now and then they will admit that there's some hostility towards America because of America's aid to Israel, but never do they talk about the fact, or the specific facts of that, and how maybe, just maybe, we should change the foreign policy so that we, as Americans, if you want to use that term, and I'll use it just for the sake of clarity or ease of speech, they never want to talk about how we might, as Americans, discontinue being human shields for Israel. Should we be human shields for the state of Israel? No. In the old days, it might be a situation where, okay, the United States is giving Israel billions of dollars a year, but it's just cash, and the Arabs and the Jews can fight each other, and no huge deal to the American public. Well, now it's reached a new level. Now the Arabs, who have a legitimate grievance, there's no question about it, with the United States government, is coming to this country to attack the Jews and those aligned with the Jews, the United States government. The United States institutions like the Pentagon and United States economic wealth, such as the World Trade Center. and further utilizing the airline industry, so to speak, to immobilize that. These individuals are very upset. And these individuals are ready and willing to die to make us die, to make Americans in general die, because of U.S. support for Israel. Well, certainly if there was ever an event the past number of years that should make people flock to our side, to our cause, to our holy banner, to our flag, it is this. It is what happened on September 11th. We have said all along that if we continue to allow an open border, and if we continue to support the state of Israel, we will have bad consequences. And sure enough, it's happened. There's no getting around it. Even when I was on the radio recently, Louisiana Radio, and John Fine, the sportscaster, was on there, he had to even admit that a certain amount of the explanation for September 11th rested with U.S. foreign policy bankrolling Israel. And that's coming from a Jew, coming publicly, because there's just no way he could squirm out of it. The government might be trying to talk about evildoers, and George W. Bush can barely say anything but, well, we got to stop the evildoers. But the reality is, for a lot of people in this society, a lot of white people realize that this wouldn't have happened if it weren't for bad, bad foreign policy. Well, from obviously the World Church, the Creator's standpoint, there really is nothing that the United States government can do that we'll be happy with. What we have to do is alienate the people from the government as much as possible. Therefore, we're not out there cheering George W. Bush. We're not out there waving American flags and saying, hee-haw. We're not doing that. We're not out there promoting this war. We're not going to simply fall into step and march in line as we have this little phony fight designed to increase the government's power and prestige at the expense of the racial loyalist struggle. You've already seen it yourself, undoubtedly, how the government's talking about how this is bringing us all together and how America's greatness is proven in its diversity and how Muslims, Jews, and Christians everywhere banding together against the terrorists, and etc. You can see the handwriting on the wall. They want to make this into a situation in which their policies that cause this problem are completely overlooked, and instead, people say to themselves, hey, America's experiment, great experiment, has succeeded. Well, let's get back to history for a bit, shall we? The fact of the matter is that America is very young, extremely young. The United States is an extremely young country. 226 years is nothing in the scheme of history. The Egyptian Empire lasted, I believe, for 2,500 years. The Roman Empire lasted for 700 years or so, or even a little longer. In fact, more like 1,000 years, I think, actually, when I think about it. You had the Indian Empire last for, I believe, 500 years or something to that effect. And don't quote me on that. I don't have my data in front of me. You have many countries lasting for a long period of time. The country of France has been around for a long time. The country of England certainly has been around for a long time. Russia has been around for a long time. The United States is a new event. And certainly the signs are there that if it continues on this course, it is going to disintegrate like the other empires of old as well. And that's what America has become in a lot of ways, an empire, where we are stretching our tentacles out across the world in a feverish attempt to control and manipulate and interfere with the affairs of other races, other nations, etc. You know, this brings up an interesting point, I think. A lot of the media, of course, want to call us white supremacists. Well, white supremacy is really something that connotes the idea of trying to oppress the other races, trying to reign over the other races, trying to dominate the other races. We don't want this. We want the other races out of our society, out of America, out of Europe, out of every place where white people call home. We want the other races out. We are not attempting to dominate the other races. We want separation from the other races. And yet, on the other side, the United States government does seem to be a supremacist government. Maybe not for white supremacy, of course not, but for economic and Jew supremacy. By controlling what happens in the world, by having troops here, there, and everywhere, everywhere except for the American U.S.-Mexican border, by the way, the government is enforcing its will on people and incurs their hatred as a result. People, in general, regardless of race, if you want to put it that way, don't like people interfering with their actions, with their customs, with their culture, with their mores. And so this campaign in Afghanistan, as the bombs rain down right now as I speak, as a matter of fact, and I saw an update just a few moments ago on television, more bombs are being dropped, etc. As this goes on, more and more people are going to, more and more of the Arabs and Afghans, etc., are going to hate the United States. More and more individuals are going to sign up to become suicide bombers, and here come terrorists to a neighborhood near you. No thanks. So as we think about what's going on right now in this new war, and that's what they're calling it even, the new war, another no-win war, I might add, we have to think about the fact that this is just going to exacerbate the situation. Who's being the supremacist? I think the government's being supremacists. We simply want to take care of our own kind and let the other races wither on the vine. We don't care if they starve or what happens to them. We want to take care of our own kind. But instead, we have the imperial Jewish corporate regime that is out to fleece and manipulate and bring in the third world labor as a consequence. Just bring them in. And one thing, of course, that's somewhat mystifying is where the heck are the unions? You know, we used to have strong unions in this country, and I know a lot of people don't like the unions. Some people do. I've always had somewhat mixed feelings about them because I think on the one hand, the unions were absolutely required 100 years ago and did much to make better working conditions for our people, and should be applauded for that. On the other hand, I don't believe that unions should be instruments of class warfare. I don't like the fact that they have been coddling the mud people for some time now either, especially when it's the mud people that undercut the union workers' wages. It's not white people that are undercutting their wages. It's these Mexicans and these niggers who are willing to work for a lot cheaper rates. But in any case, where are the unions while this country's invaded? Where are the unions where these Mexicans come in and work for a dollar an hour under the table and even minimum wage is a lot less than the average union worker wants to make or is accustomed to making? Now, boy, I brought up a lot of subjects on this week's show. I hope you bore with me okay. It's not my intent, once again, at least oftentimes anyway, I don't plan on writing out an actual script per se. I'd rather be a little more spontaneous than that and make you aware of these issues and internalize these issues and find this show interesting. The main point of this show is to inculcate you even further with the racial loyalist doctrine, to bring up various news events going on and address them so that you can once again go out into the world and preach to the people what is true and what they need to know. This show, of course, is we're hoping to have many more people listen, as I think I mentioned earlier. We have to bring its attention to more and more people. There's been, you know, debate, of course, in the white racial struggle, just how much we should deal with the masses. I say we have to deal with them all the time. The idea that somehow we can win without the masses is foolhardy. We have to win the masses. There's no getting around that. Simply believing in your race is not enough. And I know that may seem contrary to what some people might have taught you or informed you about, but simply believing is not enough. simply believing will not change the course of history that is going against us as white people today. We have to believe and fight. Believe, obey, and fight. That's one of our slogans. That's on our membership application. And that's the person we're looking for, in fact, as a member of the World Church of the Creator. Someone who is ready not only to believe, but obey and fight for the aims of the World Church of the Creator and creativity. Nor can we simply win by being a lone wolf. And that in itself might be topic or a topic for another show. But the idea of simply being alone and trying to change the course of history by everybody being by themselves is, once again, foolhardy. We need organization. We need a mighty battering ram, and that's the World Church of the Creator. The World Church of the Creator is a mighty battering ram across the world for white people everywhere. Now, on this show, it's true, I'm going to focus a lot on America for a lot of reasons. That's where we are. That's where the bulk of our members are. That's where most of my information comes from. I don't know what's going on right now, for example, in France or in Germany or in Russia, South Africa. I know a bit what's going on down there. But I'm going to focus on America. But once again, the fight is for a worldwide white racial victory. That's what we want, a worldwide white racial community. We have our teachings in many languages now. We have our holy books being translated into other languages. And with the age of the internet, we have the capability to have our teachings all over the world simply by having them on a website. And I would encourage all of you who are in other countries and who wish to pursue the project of translating our holy books into your respective language to contact me, pmhale1@aol.com, and certainly we will get in touch and see what we can do for you and what you can do for us, because we want and desperately, dearly need to win white people in all countries around the world. This is not, or I guess, let me back up. We're not going to make the mistake, the same mistake as the National Socialists did in Germany, in which Adolf Hitler said National Socialism is not for export, and there is very little support of pro-National Socialist movements in other countries except for Germany. We believe that that was partially responsible, at least partially responsible, for those countries surrounding Germany to be inveigled into a war against Germany. We don't want that. This time what we want is for a strong creativity movement to be in every white country, every country that has white people in it, I should say, around the world, so that no matter what this government may try to do against the World Church of the Creator in America, there will always be the World Church of the Creator in France and in Switzerland and Germany and Italy and Greece, etc. In other words, they cannot bash our bag of eggs against a rock, because we have other baskets out there. And if they try to do so, then we will live regardless. That's just the bottom line. My comrades, we need you to join the fight today. We need you to join the fight full force today. There are many of you out there that support the church in your ideas. And you read our emails, you listen to this radio show. We need you to go even further. We need you to pass out literature. We need you to sponsor White Revolution, our public access television show in your area. We need you to write letters to your local newspapers, and some of them will be printed. We need you to have street demonstrations. We need you to have public meetings. We need you to make donations so that our cause can continue as it has been and even stronger in the future. We need you to support in every creative way you can this great cause. This cause can and will win if white people rally behind it. And I'm not even saying all white people, but a sizable amount of white people, if they come to the aid and the support of the World Church of the Creator, we can make history. We can turn this around and have a racial society, a beautiful society of tomorrow. I look forward to the day when I can walk down any street in America, or any street in the world, without fear, or any concern that, well, there's a nigger gangbanger on the street corner, I look forward to the day when a white woman can walk her child in the baby carriage on any street, anywhere, without fear. I look forward to the day when there won't be one rape of a white woman by a savage nigger beast. And there are many, many of these occurrences happening every year, and perhaps right now somewhere. A white woman is being drugged into an alley or attacked viciously by these half-human savages. I look forward to the day when the Jews are put out of business in this world, when no longer are our livelihood and our lives sucked dry by these parasites. I look forward to the day when we have a media that is promoting healthy values, healthy lifestyles, instead of faggotry, race mixing, and corruption of all other kinds. I look forward to the day when, yes, you can open up your daily newspaper and know that you're being told the truth, when we have a truthful media. I look forward to the day when the government is a pro-white government, and instead of putting money and power in the hands of our racial enemies, they are looking out for us. I look forward to the day when we have full employment, which we can easily have if we have a white, racial, authoritarian government, rather than this silly puppet, money, Jew money control government of today. I look forward to the day when our culture shines, when our esteem is at an all-time high, when our people feel happy about life and have a purpose in life once again. In fact, a better purpose than ever before. As our founder said, that the victory of creativity will mean so much to so many is an understatement. Do your part today. I will close then with his last those last lines from him. I urge you to listen to this program and again next week. Write us today at P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611. Support this cause with every fiber of your being, and together we will win this racial holy war. Rahoa!